There had been abuse in my family, but it was mostly musical in nature.
Are you ready to get your world rocked?
Ready!
Are you ready to get your mind blown?
Do it!
1, 2, 3, 4!
Multi-instrumentalist Van Hunt went from the top of the major label food chain to releasing his latest record independently on the internet. Yet his music is better than it's ever been. I'm Jim DeRogatis from WBEZ and Columbia College.
And I'm Greg Kot from the Chicago Tribune. Van Hunt joins us in the studio for a conversation and a live performance. Later in the show, Jim and I review the new, long-awaited release from Fiona Apple. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions. You are listening to Sound Opinions, and time now for some music news.
That is a little bit of Lonely Boy by the band The Black Keys, who are closing in, Greg, on almost a million copies sold of their seventh album, El Camino. You'll recall a couple of years ago when Tom Waits, your hero, sued a snack chip manufacturer for initially approaching him and saying, would you give us one of your songs? He said no, or he said no. And then they just had somebody record something that sounded exactly like him. He won in court. Now the Black Keys are going to court. That song, Lonely Boy, is being used to sell power tools for the Home Depot chain. Listen to this commercial.
Whoever said less is more wasn't talking about power tools. Ryobi has over 50 tools that work off of one 18-volt battery. And because all of our tools and batteries are compatible, it's easy to upgrade to high-performance lithium-ion. Ryobi One Plus, available only one place, the Home Depot.
So we have no vocals there, but obviously the song is very similar. Not only that, but Pizza Hut has been using the song Gold on the Ceiling, or a song that sounds just like it, to sell Cheesy Bites pizza. The Black Keys have gone to a musicologist who, according to the band's spokesperson, confirms that this is copyright infringement. The case is seeking unspecified damages of more than $75,000 apiece for each song. And also joining the lawsuit is producer Brian Burton, also known as Danger Mouse. I hear songs all the time that sound like my favorite bands being used in ads that aren't my favorite bands. Are you hearing the same thing? If you've got a contender, give us a call on the Sound Opinions hotline, 888-859-1800.
That is a track from Radiohead's The King of Limbs, the 2011 album that the British Quintet is highlighting on their current tour of North American amphitheaters. Hugely acclaimed tour, rave reviews all around, but marred by tragedy when the roof of the stage for one of their recent shows in Toronto collapsed right before that show, killing one of their crew members, forcing the cancellation of that show and a string of subsequent others. And bringing up the question again about the safety of these temporary outdoor stages, recall that last summer we had a string of such incidents, including the most tragic of all, that stage collapse at the Indiana State Fair when seven people were killed. At the Ottawa Blues Festival, the members of Cheap Trick barely escaped death when their stage collapsed, and they later approached members of Congress about potentially creating some sanctions to monitor this industry, which has been going on for about 30 years now. Temporary stages being set up across festivals across the world since the 70s, really, without any sort of licensing being imposed. Now some people are saying it's time for a set of standard rules to be applied to all of these stages as they're being set up. In the case of the Radiohead stage tour collapse, the Ontario Ministry of Labor is looking at four separate entities. So this case could drag on for several months, if not years, before it is resolved. It's been a rough summer already for electronic dance music as well. In the latest Electric Daisy Carnival in Las Vegas, 320,000 people attending. Two people died after that rave. A 31-year-old Florida man was run over by a truck. A 22-year-old pre-med student fell from the 27th floor of her Vegas hotel room. The promoter, Insomniac, one of the biggest rave promoters in the world, is saying we really didn't have anything to do with either of those incidents. They occurred outside the grounds. But recall that Insomniac already is in trouble from a 2010 Electric Daisy Carnival in Los Angeles. L.A. basically barred the festival from that city after a 15-year-old girl died of a fatal drug overdose in 2010, and 114 people were arrested, 226 people injured. So it remains to be seen what Vegas has to say about EDM and the Electric Daisy Carnival in its city, but this can't be good news for the promoters.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. I'm Tim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And that's a little bit of the song A Time Machine Is My New Girlfriend by this week's guest, songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Van Hunt. Van is from Ohio, Greg, and he's always straddled musical worlds. He's got the velvety voice of an R&B singer, but a rock and roller's love of guitar and drums. He's kind of soft-spoken in person, but on stage, he's this outgoing showman who really lives up to his musical idols Sly Stone and David Bowie.
Van got his start in music in the late 90s, writing and producing tracks for R&B artists like Dion Ferris in Atlanta. So when he finally got around to releasing a major label debut in 2004, people more or less expected him to stick to that standard R&B blueprint. But he did anything but, and that led to friction with the higher-ups at his label, Capitol. Van's third album, What Were You Hoping For, is an independent release, and it was a shoo-in for my top 10 albums of 2011. Van and his band stopped by Sound Opinion Studio to perform tracks from the album, and I kicked off the conversation by asking him when he first knew the musician's life was for him.
Right around the time that my father showed me a Prince record with him on the horse, I liked opening up the record and reading, like, seeing words like synthesizer, Hollywood. Like, wow, this, you know, this seems important.
So the liner notes and the pictures were just as important as the music in some ways, it seems like.
Yes.
The imagery.
Yeah. You weren't frightened at all by that, because Prince can frighten small children.
No, I was much more afraid of Ronald Reagan than Prince.
Oh, there you go.
Your father was certainly a colorful character, it sounds like. Your mother was the woman who raised you, and you spent some weekends with your dad, right?
Sure.
And he had a very different lifestyle than your mom did. Sounded like she was the disciplinarian, and your father was the one that was showing you kind of the more offbeat paths in life.
Sure, you could say that, but my dad's pretty normal, pretty normal dude. We didn't spend as much time as either he or I would have liked, but he was the one who, you know, made me feel like creating was an okay choice as a profession. You know, although he had no idea how I would end up at this point. And neither did my mom, but and neither did I, you know.
But he knew some musicians, because people maybe not realize that, you know, where you're from in Ohio, there was a big funk scene there in the 70s and 80s.
Sure, it was huge, and you know, all of the natives who lived there, you know, were very proud of the Ohio Players and Slave and Fazo, Roger Troutman and Zapp. And between my father and my uncle, I think they knew somebody in all the groups. So, you know, we would constantly run into them. Actually, one of the Ohio Players lived right behind my father's house, so.
Oh,
So it was a dream that seemed within reach. Maybe I can do what those guys did, make records, tour.
Well, I looked at what I wanted to do, which was more like Thelonious Monk or Prince, as being different than the R&B and funk bands and what they were doing. Their brand of music seemed much different than the solo kind of insular kind of artist channel that I wanted to.
Well, like that guy on the horse, like Prince. You're famous as a multi-instrumentalist. You know, I've seen on the credits of these albums, there doesn't seem to be anything you can't play. But where did you start? What's the first thing you picked up?
First thing I learned to play at all was saxophone. I didn't take it very far, just a few years. Then I picked up drums and went on from there. But I play, you know, at a little bit of everything.
When you sit down to write, what do you write on, Van?
Piano. Yeah. Well, to be honest, you know, most of the songs come to me in my head, like, you know, when I'm in between sleep and not sleep. And they're pretty complete. Usually if I feel like getting out of bed, I get out and I can just sit down at the piano. And usually most of it's right there.
Wow. Words and music?
No, just music or words. You know, usually words come to me when in a conversation with somebody.
That's how you started your career in the music business, right? I mean, you really were a songwriter first before performer.
Exactly. In Atlanta, I just quit school and, you know, needed to figure out a way to pay bills. So I just started producing, like, hip-hop or whoever walked in the studio and putting tracks together. And after about 10 years, I'd had enough of that and decided I'd try and give it a go myself.
Hopeless, the song you wrote for Dion Ferris in 97, was a hit for her. They say I'm hopeless. Was the result of that a positive thing for you? I mean, did it bring you more work, more attention?
It changed my life pretty significantly for a short period of time until everyone realized that I didn't really just want to be a producer and a songwriter. Mm-hmm. And when it became really about me being an artist or even just a singer, it became a little more difficult. I'm not sure people saw me in that light. And then after the first record, you know, people started to understand that, oh, okay, he wants to be a singer. But then after the second record, they said, oh, he actually wants to be an artist.
And you were dealing with the major label system. You were on a very big label, Capitol Records, put out your first couple of records. And I do remember when those records came out, I do think people were a little, they weren't quite sure what to make of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it R&B? Is it rock? Is it soul? Is it something in between? I imagine those were the conversations that you had with the label at the time, too. Like, what are you doing here, Van?
Yeah.
How did you sort of respond to those inquiries about what kind of art you were trying to create?
Well, I was under the impression that when I signed within the major label system that they understood what I wanted to do. So it didn't dawn on me that they wanted me to go in any particular direction, and no one said that to me. They probably said it to my management at the time, but not to me. So I thought that they would give me the Ray Charles treatment. And, you know, just sort of give me 3, 4, 5 records to kind of, you know, break into the market under my own strength. But, you know, it was all passive aggressive and it became sort of a toxic kind of environment to be in, unfortunately, because I think that the major label system, how it works from, you know, creation to A&R to artist development actually is a good blueprint for success in merging art and commerce. But I think, you know, greed and ignorance and fear has really been ruinous to the industry.
All right. We want to continue the conversation in a minute, but Van, you're going to play a song for us, right?
Yes.
What are we going to hear?
Well, how about Watching You Go Crazy is Driving Me Insane?
Excellent.
It It's driving me. It's driving me. It's driving me in. Short on loot, are short on friends and lovers too. But you go crazy,
driving me insane.
Don't be going lazy, but maybe you're working overtime. But you go crazy, making me lose my mind. Maybe let my music drive you mad. Let it be your party man. On delicate beach, let's move out in the morning.
Making me lose my mind.
We have no dollar bill to pay our water bill, but we're still sexy. Who are they? They are much less attractive when their money is subtracted.
That was Watching You Go Crazy is Driving Me Insane from Van Hunt and his band live on Sound Opinions. Coming up after a short break on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX, Jim and I review the new album from Pop Shantou's Fiona Apple.
Legend falls, no, it won't hurt forever. One day you'll make them sad with your own changes. Give them what they want, and all they want is more. No matter what you say, it all falls short. You asked me to be here, so I'm here, but I had to get high just to stand by your side while another young boy calls a legend in the making.
Took my home. Her body was warm as we walked in through the church doors. With a loaded eyes, she looked.
on my shoulder.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. I'm here with Greg Kot, and you're listening to our conversation with genre-bending songwriter Van Hunt. His latest album is What Were You Hoping For? Greg, I know it was one of your favorite records of last year. It was a buy-it album for me as well. This is an artist whose influences run deep and wide. We've already talked about Van's roots in Ohio funk and his experience as an R&B producer, but this is a guy who name-drops Bach, Thelonious Monk, and Frank Zappa in the same sentence. So I had to ask him, how did his musical education begin?
Well, it began in a number of different places, but once my mom said, you know, if you don't get this right, you're going to be a bum, I said, well, well, hey, you know, I really got to get started, because she's obviously not going to be much help. So I enlisted, you know, all kinds of record stores and just bought as much music as I could, and I just listened and listened and collected what I liked and applied it to what I was trying to do.
Well, what's the common thread there? What are you hearing in Bach and Muddy Waters and Frank Zappa? What makes it resonate with you?
Well, there's usually one thing that always stands out, and that's the thing that I call upon in my own music. But with Bach, it's always the attack of the bow against the string on the cello, particularly in the Bach cello suites. Sounds like rock music to me. Mm-hmm. And with Muddy Waters, is always like the growl of Hubert Sumlin's guitar and Muddy's voice. Like, to me, if you say blues, that's the first thing I think of. Mm-hmm. And with someone like Frank Zappa, it's always his humor and his compositions.
Got a little lady walked that street, telling all the boys that she can't be. $20 bill, I can sit in the street. Meet me on the corner, boy, I don't need it. Man in a suit with a bow tie neck, gonna buy a club in a day by chick.
Wow. I can tell that that's the pastiche out of where you're kind of drawing from in your own music. Those elements are, you all want those elements in your own music.
Well, I would like to think that people, you know, get that out of the music, yeah.
Which is exactly the opposite of the way the music industry was thinking, which is they want to put you in a niche, right? I mean, that seems to be where it's been at for the last decade. It seems like you had firsthand experience with that. Did they try to nicheify you?
Sure. I mean, once I finished the record, then it became how to market it and promote it. And, of course, my big idea was to put the band on an open truck and pull up in the middle of the Wendy's parking lot and see if people liked it. Their big idea was to spend $1 million and try to shove the music into one format on the radio. And I just thought my deal was a lot cheaper. It made more sense. I still do, in fact, particularly since now I owe $1 million, you know.
They're appearing at Wendy's shortly after this taping, actually. Van, you had some harsh words for the major label system, even as you praised it for when it worked. You know, it's like they're always reinventing the wheel. It had worked with this Prince guy, right? Once they stopped trying to sell him strictly as funk or strictly as this or that, and they let him be Prince, which was everything, you know, becomes one of the biggest artists of the last century. Did you ever make an argument like that with a guy in a suit?
Oh, I have reams and reams of emails with that same argument. And, you know, I would take it. Obviously, I'm a big music history guy, so I would take it from Ray Charles to Sly Stone to Prince.
Well, I think one of the strengths that you have is that live performance is every bit as fascinating as the records. And I've been in crowds where they haven't seen you before, and you can just see the light bulb coming, like, wow. How did you hone your chops as a live performer?
The variety of songs really is, like I told you, I listen to so much music. You know, when I'm writing, I try to just allow no boundaries. And so whatever comes to mind, I just throw it in. It's easy for me, and I always assume it's easy for other people. Not only to listen to it, but to also play it. And that's arguable. But that's how it comes to my mind, and that's how I want to present it to people when they see it live. I'm learning that the secret to that is good orchestration, arrangement, making the ideas a little more articulate.
We're talking to Van Hunt, and he is here in the Sound Opinion studio with his band, Doug Showalter on guitar, Ruth Price on drums, Jonathan Richards on bass. How about giving us another song, Van?
Awesome. We'll play Who Will Love Me in Winter.
Looking up a smile for me, baby. I say to the ragged flame. Dynamic world blows and with the cold brings back the lonely lush again. The autumn leaves fall from the trees and hold me captive with a dance in the air. And I know with the passing of the years, I must find love from somewhere. A spaceship crashed against the wall. My neighbor's grass ain't so green after all. I wouldn't have a second thought about the fall. I'm wondering who would love me in winter.
That is the great Van Hunt and his band with Who Will Love Me in Winter on Sound Opinions. Okay, so we've been talking a lot about music, Van. I want to talk about some of your lyrics, all right? Watching You Go Crazy is driving me insane. A time machine is my new girlfriend, the wonderfully Prince-inspired cross-dresser. Where are you coming up with this stuff, man? I mean, these are great left-field psychedelic lyrics.
Well, thank you. You know, I don't know where I get these ideas from. I think that the same way I've collected music that I like, I've collected writers that I like, and I throw that into my subconscious, and it just comes out, and I try not to police it too much.
Who are some of your favorite writers?
James Baldwin, Ayn Rand, particularly the way she writes, much more so than, you know, her personal philosophy. But I like that the imagery was very well articulated.
The other famous rock lyricist inspired by Ayn Rand? Do you know?
No.
Rush.
Oh, wow.
Neil Peart, the drummer, wrote many of Rush's lyrics and was like really an Ayn Rand aficionado for the first 10 years of that band.
Yeah, she was one of the best at putting you in the moment. I actually think that's one of the overlooked aspects to her writing, because the writing was so polarizing.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, and the politics. So storytelling, but also colorful imagery.
Yes, and David Bowie, too. I really enjoy his lyrics and the imagery and the lyrics and all the borderline stream of consciousness in his writing.
On this album, we're talking about the latest one, What Were You Hoping For? That in itself is somewhat of a loaded question. And I think you're looking back in some ways on what's happened in your life. It had to be a huge upheaval to basically record an entire album, have the record company send it out, in fact, to some people to preview, and then at the last minute pull it off the shelf, which is what happened to Popular in 2008 on the Blue Note label. Mm. Basically starting over at that point. And it seems to me like this record is in some ways chronicling that experience of what does it mean to start over and really find out who you are.
That would be a perfect way, I think, of summing up the record, this motivation. But, you know, it wasn't a direct message to, you know, my situation with the major label system. But it definitely came out of the upheaval of my life post that era.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever at a point where you thought, what's plan B? There's a lot of artists who have gone where you've gone, and it stopped for them at that point. They thought, you know, it's over, it's pointless, I'm quitting. Did you ever get to that point in your own life?
Oh, sure, just this morning. No, I have, you know, plan B through Z. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I have people in my life who have shown me the importance of what it is I provide to culture and to myself. And that if I'm true to it, that they'll be supportive of my endeavors. And that has proven true. When I believe in that, this is where it ends up.
Fractured, but not broken. Still moving well out in the open. Lower my gun and keep my questions to a minimum. And let you run and run around.
Obviously, there's been critical acclaim, but I remember when I first interviewed you in 2004, you were saying, you know, I want to get to where Sly Stone did, 400,000 people at Woodstock, dancing to my music. Yeah. Is that still a goal that you feel is realizable?
Yeah, it's just no longer a goal of mine, but I do think that's a possibility for me, yes, mm-hmm. Because I do think that the music I make is sincere. And I think that is what people pick up on. That's what they call the magic of a Sly Stone song or Ray Charles or whoever it is you like.
Van, I have one more serious question before we have some fun with some more music. I've read that you spent a lot of time before making this album photographing people who were hurt by the recession.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? What was that experience like and that it informed this record? What were you doing and how did you bring it into What Were You Hoping For?
Part of the I hate to call it a healing process, but, you know, my life was in such upheaval, and I didn't feel particularly creative musically, so I just started taking pictures of things that I saw. And the first theme I latched onto were all these couches on the street. I thought people were just being evicted from their homes, and that was part of the reason there were so many just couches strewn all about. But the other reason was, you know, people were downsizing. And that turned into a project about couches. So then it was a little easier for me to then begin a project of building songs for an album. And so What Were You Hoping For? The actual song and the album title, it's kind of born out of that process, because I'm sitting here watching, you know, these people struggle through this recession, and, you know, people are coming to the realization that the American dream really isn't for them, and it's not going to happen. Like the ecosystem, the economic system needs everyone from top to bottom. It took the lower income folks like myself to realize, I mean, we realized that first. Like, okay, well, we need the guys at the top to give us money, give us jobs, provide some security opportunities. And later on, they began realizing they needed us, you know, to spend the money. And so it became kind of like this comical cycle to me. Like, well, you know, where are you hoping for when you make these decisions? You know, like, I'm going to make the decision to kind of spit upon the people below me, you know, on and on. And that's kind of where it was born out of.
It's the end of white flame. Can't afford to keep moving on. Money tight. Begging door to door in the white flame. Can't afford to live around the people you like. Money tight. You're hating your life. Maybe that's the mechanism to bring me closer to you. Tell me why you're open for. Why do you do the things you do? Maybe that's the algorithm.
You're listening to Sound Opinions. We're here with Van Hunt. Van, you got another song for us then?
Yes. The last and final song is the aforementioned Crossdresser.
Hmm.
Come on, Chi-Town. Put your hands together. Clap with me. Beach Boys.
I'm not brokenhearted. Sometimes I wear the scars on my head. Impressions improve with the passing of time. I don't really miss her. Sometimes I wear her main colors. Cross-dresser, I was just a ruler who sparked a counterculture. Down the makeup, back to the ring of cross-dresser. Wanted to disguise the hurt and wound up blending gender. But I got to know the better through all my music and scripts. I can't reinvent those magic moments, but I can make believe. Like the babies who dress up as ghosts on Halloween, drag queen. They ask me as if a shock or comedy. Or are you expressing your sexual preference? Cross dresser. I was just a fool in love who sparked a counterculture. Now I'm covered in wings and molded cross-dresser. Maybe I can be a woman shame, and she'll kneel to me and pray. And I'll reveal to her a true healer who's a cross-dresser. No true separation, her own truth. Major sweep her, I did that by a canoe to appreciate tone elegance. No trouble, I do don't you find? But never should be guarded in a rebel mode, actual. Cross-dresser, I was just a fool in love, was born to counter culture. And now I'm covered in weeds and mold. Cross-dresser, wanted to disguise.
That is Crossdresser from Van Hunt and his band on Sound Opinions. Van, thank you so much for coming in and doing this for us.
Thank you. It was a blast.
No, the world's no place to raise a child. You've been dropped into the wild.
For more music and video of Van Hunt performing live in our studio, visit soundopinions.org. And we invite you to share your sound opinions on the air. Call 888-859-1800. Coming up next, Jim and I review Fiona Apple's first new album in 7 years, and I drop a quarter in the Desert Island Jukebox. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Twisting limbs. Why the hurry with so much?
attempts. He creeps slowly, chasing the golden dim of night. Butterflies in my brain, these ideas of mine percolate the mind, trickle down the spine, swarm the belly, swelling to a blaze. That's where the pain comes in, like a second skeleton trying to fit beneath the skin. I can't fit the feelings in. Oh, every single night's a light with my brain.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. He is Greg Kot. And that is Fiona Apple with a song called Every Single Night from her new album, Deep Breath. The idler wheel is wiser than the driver of the screw, and whipping cords will serve you more than ropes will ever do. Born to a showbiz family in New York, she famously set out for Los Angeles at age 16. Some demos caught the attraction of Sony Music. They said, here is the next Tori Amos, and a big debut album followed in the summer of 1996, Tidal. She's only put out four records since 1996. It's been a seven-year wait since her last album, which actually came out in two versions. She really seems to agonize over the recording of each of these albums, fight with her label about when they're done, what version should be released. Here, she has not gone to her go-to producers, John Bryan and Mike Elizondo. She's gone to her drummer, her touring drummer, Charlie Drayton. What is she giving us? It's a pretty stripped-down album. Vocals and piano, front and center. Let's hear a song from it, and then we'll come back and give our reviews. This is Hot Knife by Fiona Apple from The Idler Wheel, etc., etc.
Fun butter of fun butter, if I'm butter them, he's a hot knife. He makes my heart a cinema score. We show him a dancing bird of paradise. If I'm butter of fun butter, if I'm butter them, he's a hot knife. He makes my heart a cinema score. We show him a dancing bird of paradise. He excites me, must be like the Genesis rhythm. I get feisty whenever I'm with. If I'm butter, if I'm butter, if I'm butter, then he's a hot knife. He makes my heart a cinema score. Ski showing the dancing bird of paradise. I'm a hot knife, I'm a hot knife, I'm a hot knife, he's a pat of butter. If I get a chance, I'm gonna show him that he's never gonna need another, never need another.
If I'm butter, if I'm butter, if I'm butter, then he's a hot knife. He makes my heart a cinema score. He's never gonna need another, never need another. If I'm butter, if I'm butter, if I'm butter, then he's a hot knife. He makes my heart a cinema score. He's never dancing bird in paradise. He excites me, must be like the Genesis of rhythm. Get feisty whenever I'm with him. If I'm butter, if I'm butter, if I'm butter, then he's a hot knife. He makes my heart a cinema score. Screen show, dancing bird in paradise. If I'm butter, if I'm butter, if I'm butter, then he's a hot knife. He makes my heart a cinema score. Screen show, dancing bird in paradise. I'm a hot knife.
That is Hot Knife from Fiona Apple. The new album is called The Idler Wheel, and a whole bunch of other words right immediately after that. A long, long title. But only the fourth album, as Jim mentioned, of a career that goes back to the mid-90s. She does take her time, 7 years in this case, to make the record. It is a stripped-down affair. Charlie Drayton and Fiona are the only two musicians on the record. It is basically a combination of her voice and piano with Drayton's percussion. They do a lot of experimenting within those very narrow boundaries. You're hearing factory sounds, slapping thighs as percussion instruments on this record. And Fiona Apple has never taken more chances with her voice. It is all over the place in terms of how she's trying to make it sound like a percussion instrument. 1 minute, channeling a little bit of Nina Simone blues type feeling in one song. It's a pretty ferocious record for what it is. You know, Fiona Apple scares me a little bit. I think there's like 27 voices inside that head. In some cases, she's fighting with all of them. She admits as much. She says, I've got all this stuff going on in my head, and I'm trying to process it, trying to figure out where my life is going. You can hear it almost like a stream of consciousness in these songs. There are hooks here. There are great pieces of piano playing. There's great interaction with the drums on this record. I love the fact that she's never made a record quite like this. In the past, it was very Baroque style arrangements. And I think by getting away from some of those big name producers like John Bryan, she was trying to make a much more intimate record, much more about what she's like when you see her perform on her home stage at Largo in Los Angeles. I think it's the best album of her career. And I think it's one of the best albums of 2012 so far. I give The Idler Wheel by Fiona Apple a buy it rating all the way.
Greg, I want to start out by saying I admire Fiona Apple, or what she aspires to be. Passionate, ambitious, musically challenging, but listening to her is a dreadful chore that makes me reach for the Excedrin Extra Strength. You know what this is? This is Jess on New Girl imitating Andrew Bird trying to be Tom Waits.
Oops.
There is a needless complication to this music where in the space of one tune, you're going from Tin Pan Alley to Broadway bombast to Nina Simone, classical music trills, hip-hop rock, everything, the kitchen sink. None of it works. That song, Hot Knife, epitomizes everything that's wrong. You know, it starts with rolling timpani, and then she's scat singing those silly lyrics about I'm a pat of butter, you're a hot knife, right? And then there's a bridge that has nothing to do with anything. There's the big Baroque piano. 27 voices. They're all histrionic, and they're all like painful ululations that just drive me crazy. This is a trash it record on the Sound Opinion scale.
Oh, you're so wrong.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
Stranded, I'm so far from home. Stranded, yeah, I'm on my own. Stranded, you gotta leave me alone, 'cause I'm stranded on my own.
As often as possible here on Sound Opinions, Greg or I like to take a trip to the desert island and play you a song we can't live without. Today, it's Greg's turn to hop in the Star Trek transporter and hit the Desert Island Jukebox. What do you got for us, Greg?
Well, thank you, Jim. I've been thinking a lot about this guy, Jimmy Cliff, who is a great reggae star, but I don't think he's ever really earned the status as the great reggae ambassador that he is. I think it was Cliff more than any other single artist that introduced reggae, the native music of Jamaica, the R&B of Jamaica, if you will, to the rest of the world. First and foremost, people remember him from the Harder They Come soundtrack. He starred in that movie, and he also contributed several key songs. The title song, You Can Get It If You Really Want It, Many Rivers to Cross, Sitting in Limbo. But he was already making great records before that one hit the States in 72. I was reminded of that last year when Paul Simon went on tour and covered one of Cliff's songs. In fact, the song that I'm about to play. Simon was so enamored with what he was hearing from Jimmy Cliff out of Jamaica in the late 60s that he immediately flew down to Jamaica to record Mother and Child Reunion with Cliff's band. Bob Dylan, when he heard this song that I'm about to play, called it the greatest protest song ever written. I don't know if that was hyperbole, I don't know if that was just in the moment, but it speaks to the fact that he was speaking to a new audience in a way that had never been heard from before.
This particular song, I think, puts him in a class with people like Curtis Mayfield, Otis Redding, Marvin Gaye. He was bringing a level of sophistication in the lyrics and in the melodies to a genre of music that was initially viewed as just a fad. Oh, it's just a beat, it's just a rhythm, it won't last very long. Jimmy Cliff has been doing this for 30, 40 years now. Reggae is definitely here to stay, and this is one of the songs that put it on the map. Two verses, basically a war protest song. It applies to Vietnam, but it could apply to any war. Two letters home, and in those two letters, Cliff talks about the tragedy of war. It's a song called Vietnam from Jimmy Cliff on Sound Opinions.
The great Jimmy Cliff with Vietnam, Greg's Desert Island Jukebox pick for the week. The Sound Opinions Desert Island Jukebox is supported by Maker's Mark. Maker's Mark bourbon. It is what it isn't. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're going to do a summer roundup of some of the biggest albums of the season.
Greg, as always, we have some thank yous to say on the way out. Mary Gaffney and Andrew Gill helped with our Van Hunt session. Sound Opinions is produced by Jason Saldana and Robin Lynn. Our assistant producers are Annie Minoff and Michael DeBonis. And our intern is Deborah Olalea. Oh, and of course, our executive producer, our fearless leader, Tori Southside Malatia. He's the hot knife to our schmear of cream cheese.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So give us a call on our hotline, 888-859-1800.
New messages.
This is Craig Waits from Louisville, Kentucky. I really enjoyed the EDM show you did. And I thought your show gave a good retrospective history of the genre, but I was surprised of one omission. The club scene that was prevalent back in Manchester, England, back in the late 70s, early 80s, the movie 24-Hour Party People spoke of.
They're applauding the DJ.
Not the music, not the musician, not the creator, but the medium. This is it. The birth of rave culture. The beatification of the beat. The dance age. This is the moment when even the white man starts dancing.
That sound gave birth to great bands like New Order, which I think is a founding band, much like Kraftwerk, of that whole genre. Love the show. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Hi, I'm Joan from Evanston, Illinois, and I just wanted to give you my vote for Best Album of the Year, and that is the album by Anders Osborne from New Orleans. But they say still there. Really, really good, and I think he's just genius and pours out his soul in every record he does. Thanks very much. Love your show. Bye.
Hey, guys, this is Will calling from Glen Ellen. Just listening to the show this week. Great show. But regarding the LP track, Domestic Disturbance Issues, Brother Ali of Rhymesayers Entertainment, on his original debut album, Shadows on the Sun, did have a track called Dorian that I think painted quite a bit of a more vivid picture. Now first things first, I don't judge you for the weed smoke, but I can't hear your daughter yelling, Daddy, please don't. And it's not once or twice, but every damn night. And there's something going on up in here that ain't right now. Man to man, I can understand. They like to stress a brother out, then we cuss each other out. But you crossing the line by putting your hands on them. Ain't nobody ever told you not to hit a damn woman, boy. But I did very much enjoy the LP track as well as the Killer Mike. Two good takes for both of you, and I look forward to meeting you guys next week. See ya.
Hey, Jim and Greg. Listening to your show Saturday and the Desert Island Pick by Jim, I almost fell out of my chair. Growing up on the south side of Chicago in the mid-60s, my parents bought a new portable stereo from Polk Brothers. As part of the deal, they received 20 free albums. Knowing my brother and I would want to play some of the albums and they didn't want them all getting wrecked, they gave us the best of Frankie Lane's Western hits and the best of Johnny Horton.
All the things I'm missing, Goodville's love and kissing, I waited at the end of my ride. Move 'em out, hit 'em up, hit 'em up, move 'em out, hit 'em up, raw high. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, cut 'em out, cut 'em out, ride 'em in raw.
We played those records over and over again. I know every single one of the songs you were talking about Frankie Lane. And even though rock and roll became my life in later years, I just love rock music above anything. I never forgot my love for Frankie Lane and Johnny Horton. It was so cool hearing that. Thanks for a really cool flashback.
No more messages.
Waiting at the end of my ride. Move 'em out, hit 'em up, hit 'em up.
To give us your opinions on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with more Sound Opinions, produced by WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.